You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by the abstract existential horror of the passage of time. Instead, it's supported by the generous donations of our listeners on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thinkingsideways to learn more. And thanks.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I am Devin, joined per usual by
Joe
and Steve.
Today we're going to talk about a mystery. This mystery was suggested by Shannon and Savvy and Bree and like
probably
everybody else in this entire world. And we're going to talk about the disappearance of Aisha DeGree.
Yeah, I have looked into this one. It's rather intriguing.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I've read on this one a couple of times as well.
Yeah. Let's do a quick overview first and then, you know, hop into everything here.
Yeah.
That quick overview is, in the early morning of Valentine's Day 2000, in the year 2000, 9-year-old Aisha DeGree left her house with a packed bag, apparently totally of her own volition.
And by early morning, we're talking like 3, 4 a.m.
Yeah, like very early morning.
Uh-huh.
When it's still dark out. By all reports, her home life was stable. It was safe. It was good.
Yeah, her family went to church and stuff.
I mean,
they were like, you know, hardworking folks.
They were close. She had no history of running away before. And spoiler alert, a lot of people think she was almost brainwashed into leaving her house.
That's the chatter you see on the internet
anyway.
It is.
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and break that down a little bit.
Okay.
Let's dig deeper into the timeline first. Work for you guys?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Aisha lived in Selby, North Carolina with her parents and her brother, who was older than her. The entire time I was reading it, for some reason I kept thinking it was her younger brother, but he's older than her.
Yeah, he's what, a year and a half older?
I don't think it's a year and a half. He was 10 when she disappeared. She was 9, almost 10, so I think it's really...
Like rapid fire, one right after the other.
Yeah, or 10 months maybe.
That's one way to do it, man.
It
done.
But as far as I can tell, it's never explicitly listed. So just so you know, but he is older than her. Aisha and her brother were what's called latchkey kids. If you're not familiar with that term, basically it just means that both of their parents had jobs, and so they would come and let themselves in and take care of themselves for a couple hours after school.
Mm, yeah, they were old enough. I mean,
they were, you know,
9
yeah.
or 10. Yeah.
Yeah, I did that at that age.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I mean, latchkey's got kind of a negative connotation, but yeah, not really.
No, I think it's okay. I mean, my boyfriend was a latchkey kid when he was younger, and he turned out fine. And
You know,
I think most kids turn out fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the only latchkey kids that don't turn out fine are the ones that come home and they unlatch the door and there's like a freaking murderer kidnapper waiting for them. I mean, those guys, they become like mysteries for us. But this isn't one of those mysteries, actually.
It's not,
It's not.
It's a little different than that.
Yeah. It sounds like Aisha's parents did shelter her and her brother, whose name is O'Brien, from the outside world a little bit. I mean, 9 and 10, that's still pretty young. And they didn't have a computer at home, for instance, and they weren't really allowed to watch the news or TV very much because as Aisha's mother, whose name is Aquila, she said, you know, every time you turn on the TV, it's just another, like, kid getting abducted or something like that. And she had heard all of the news about kids meeting predators online.
Very
and so
protective.
She was. She was very protective.
And
but
it's kind of ironic in a sad way.
It is. Know? But she also really trusted her kids, and it seems like for good reason, to really kind of respect the rules that she and her husband Harold had put into place.
Yeah, both of them seemed like good kids.
They seemed like good kids,
They followed the rules. They did well. They don't seem to be troublemakers in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, totally. The degrees were social, however. They attended school functions. They attended church and church functions. They had a really close-knit extended family. In fact,
Wasn't somebody's dad living across the street?
Harold's mom.
Harold's mom.
And
was,
his sister lived across the street.
Harold is Aisha's dad.
Yeah, sorry. So, you know, it was a close-knit community, I think. And I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, that is not the kind of community that kids who are running away from home come from. Usually they come from more broken communities and homes.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah. And where they lived was a really kind of a, it was a rural area, but they lived in a little 3 or 6 block section.
It's a little tiny subdivision, you know, and houses, ranch houses on large lots.
Yeah. It seemed like a pretty
tight-knit group. But it was kind of out in the boonies. Yeah.
We should say the degrees still live in the house.
They do.
That they were living in 2000. They've stayed there the entire time. So it's not a past tense for them. They continue to live there. Aisha and O'Brien, both the kids, they were both active. They both played in youth basketball, and I think Aisha,
softball too. I think
she played softball as well. And apparently, she was a really good athlete. She seemed to really enjoy it, and she was really good at it, at least by all reports. However, she was shy. But
she was afraid of dogs too.
She was afraid of dogs.
I've seen that noted several times.
She was afraid of dogs and of the dark, which isn't, you know,
that's not that unusual.
Nine.
Yeah, it's not that unusual at all.
Yeah.
I still am scared of certain kinds of dark, and I'm 20 years older than her, so.
Yeah, no, at 9, being afraid of the dark, definitely. Not so much for me. Dogs, no. Dogs were always my buddies, so never had that issue.
I mean, my brother was afraid of dogs when we were growing up, and one of our neighbor's dogs nipped at him once, and he thought, oh God, it attacked me, and it's awful. So he kind of had that built-in fear of dogs. But overall, I think Aisha was well-behaved. She seemed to really respect the boundaries that her parents were setting for her, and she was pretty shy and all that stuff. So that's kind of the background of this. One thing I will just mention briefly, because you'll see it mentioned on the internet before we really dive into the actual timeline of events leading up to her disappearance. Aisha was in fourth grade, and she had recently finished reading a book called The Whipping Boy.
That sounds kind of kinky.
It's definitely not that kind of book, Joe.
Oh, it's not?
It's for kids. Go on, dude.
Oh, okay.
It's a children's novel, actually, that is... It's basically about a spoiled prince that can't be punished for his actions, So his parents, who are the king and queen, I don't know why they can't punish him, but okay, by an orphan boy named Jemmy.
I can answer that question.
Why?
Why they can't punish him?
Why?
Because kings are considered at certain times in history, the king was essentially God mm-hmm. and could do no wrong because God could do no wrong. So mm-hmm. therefore you couldn't punish the God. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. where the idea of the whipping boy came from, was you wanted to make their friends so they felt bad that their friend was getting beat. It didn't really work, but that's where it came from.
I guess
that's why they wouldn't do it.
For me, this is a bit of a diversion, but for me, like, you don't have to make it public that you're spanking your child, but if they're a spoiled little brat, maybe, like...
Well, let's be honest. Most of the kings and queens weren't doing the punishing themselves.
It was a service.
Or any of the disciplinary...
So back to the whipping boy.
Yeah.
The king and queen buy an orphan boy named Jemmy.
I think Jemmy.
And he's meant to take the punishment for the spoiled prince.
Yeah, I understand that concept there.
Yeah. The prince... Steve's right on the money there. The concept was that the prince and the boy would become friends and he would feel really bad because he was getting the boy punished, so he would stop being bad.
But in the meantime, he had a good old time.
Right. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It turns out in this book, the prince runs away and demands that Jemmy come with him as his servant because princes don't do anything. There's a long, long story here. Basically, they learn a lot of things. They're joined by a girl for a little while and a dancing bear, I think. But they eventually return home, safe from their adventures, having learned lessons and becoming best friends. And the prince is no longer spoiled. And
it's
awesome. The end.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. Except when he comes back home, what he finds out is that after he disappeared, all the servants, afraid of the king's wrath, ran out and found themselves a peasant boy who was a double for him, and they replaced him. The king and queen, having hardly ever seen their son, were totally fooled.
That's a different book, Joe.
And then when he returned with his friends, like, hey, I've learned so much life adventures, and the servants went, kid, you're kind of superfluous right now, and they quietly liquidated the prince. and his friend Jemmy. And so, you know, I guess that the lesson I learned from that book is don't bother learning any life lessons because you'll probably be killed anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
That's my takeaway.
Did you want to say anything more about
that book?
Oh, many times.
I don't think the book has a whole lot to actually do with this story, but it plays in with the theories, and you will see it time and time again on almost every description of this story. So I feel like it's worth bringing up.
I feel that it's a coincidence, too.
I agree.
And that she didn't run away. But I'm prejudging it, of course. I shouldn't do that.
So let's talk timeline. I will say this is how you will see it online. It turns out from some research that maybe this is not actually accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2000, apparently President's Day and Valentine's Day were just a few days apart. So President's Day was the Friday before Valentine's Day, which was on a Monday that year.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I think
so
actually
Friday,
turns
11th,
out
yeah.
turns out that's not true necessarily.
Yeah, now President's Day 2000 was on the 21st.
Yeah.
And
so not the 11th.
So, yeah, I talked to a local reporter about why the kids had the day off, and she wasn't really sure.
I'm going to guess it was an in-service day.
Yeah, she was thinking it was probably like a teacher's work day or an in-service day or something like that, but she wasn't totally sure, but it wasn't President's Day.
But the kids did have the day off.
So they had the day off. That's the point. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
But Aisha and O'Brien had the Friday off, but, you know, obviously their parents did not. So their parents were at work on Friday, so they spent the day at their aunt's house. I'm not sure if the rules were different. I've never seen any elaboration on their time at the aunt's house or even, like, who that aunt, like, is related to or anything like that. But apparently spent the day there, and I don't know if the rules were different. For instance, if they had access to a computer there, or they were allowed to watch a different kind of TV.
The difference between the rules at home and at grandma and grandpa's?
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
And that was true growing up. I have five aunts and uncles, and so whenever we'd go visit, the rules were different at all the different houses.
Mm.
And so we got to, you know, play by the new rules. So it may or may not be important to know.
There's never been anything on it, though. That's
but
the
there's never
part.
Been, yeah. So yeah. I think I would feel better about the case if I knew what the situation was there, but again.
But, you know, the thing about it is, I don't think there was enough of an influence there to actually cause her to suddenly remarkably change her behavior or anything like that.
No, but
seems unlikely.
We'll talk more about this, I guess, in the theories a little bit. After they had spent the entire day at the aunt's house, Aisha and O'Brien went directly to basketball practice at school. So I guess it probably was an in-service day because they were still doing basketball practice and stuff. If it had been a holiday, they probably would have canceled basketball practice.
Yeah, kind of likely, it seems like.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the Pee Wee leagues are like in every area, but I do know some places where coaches want to have practice no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. But
it's important stuff. But sports is really important.
But it was taking place at school. And in my memory, at least in Portland, if the school was closed for President's Day, no one was coming in. There was no reason to unlock the school. So they would have to have somebody come in special to open the whole gym up and everything.
See, like with the school I had, the gym was, it wasn't the only way to get in the gymnasium was through the school. The gym had its own set of entrances and exits.
Well, that's true for the gym as well, you know, like where I went, but I mean, there's still school keys because then you have access to the whole school.
Probably, you know, in small towns, I'm sure it's a little more relaxed.
That's probably true.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Although Selby's a suburb kind of.
Shelby?
Shelby's kind of a suburb. No,
of Charlotte.
Of Charlotte. It's not necessarily a small town, but they went to basketball practice and then they went home and spent the rest of the evening with both their parents, as far as I can tell. The next day, Aisha's basketball team had a game, which they lost. It was their first loss of the season. She was a point guard and actually fouled out of that game. I don't know how serious the rules are, how easy it is to foul out in kids' games. You know, if you have to really be being aggressive or if a referee might say, oh, you bumped into that girl, it's a foul. So yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I doubt they're official referees. I think they're probably volunteer referees for games that size, which is why it is totally a subjective thing. Yeah. I see where you're headed.
Yeah. So I don't know if she was being abnormally aggressive or anything like that, or if the ref was just a little
like
sensitive
her.
Or
it's
what.
It's also possible to foul people without, you know, really meaning to. It happens,
absolutely.
You know,
that's
easy to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
Especially if you're a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she was upset about the loss.
She was upset about the loss and fouling out. I mean, both. She cried a little about both things.
And then she said that she was going to leave and start a new life.
No, that's not how it happened.
Oh, it didn't?
She cried a little bit, but seemed to recover because O'Brien, her brother, had a game after her, and she stayed for the whole thing and seemed to have calmed herself down and was able to get over the loss, which is a thing you are hoping that your 9-year-old can do. Is,
mm-hmm. Well, probably
know,
the parents had
a
little chat with her and said, you know, that's the way
fine.
Life is, kiddo.
Yep.
You know, you win, you win and you lose, you know.
Yep. Both parents seem to have been home on Saturday.
After the game.
Well, they both went to the game. They watched both games and then
nobody
they think
was
they
working
were home,
on Saturday.
I think, but again, I don't know that for sure. And then on Sunday, they attended church and then came home. Harold, the father of this family, was working a second shift that day, so he left kind of in the early afternoon. Aquila, it sounds like, was home with the kids for kind of just a normal, typical Sunday night, just hanging out, doing homework, things like that. I'm not totally clear on the timeline at this point because the kids, it sounds like, were sent to their room. They shared a room. They were sent to their room at about 8 to start getting ready for bed. But then at 9, the power went out, and apparently that affected their ability to have a bath. That seems late to me for a 9 and 10-year-old to be having a bath, so I don't really know what the situation there is.
I had heard the power went out earlier than that. Apparently there was a car wreck not far away and knocked out a power pole.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard as early as 6 the power went out.
Interesting.
But it's not that vitally important, but apparently there was an outage and they didn't take their baths.
Right. So they went to bed early without their baths.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid fact.
No.
Harold comes home at about 12:30, midnight 30, and checks on the kids, who he says were both asleep in their beds. It does sound like they tended to kind of wake up a little bit. At least O'Brien is able to say, I heard dad check on us.
Mm-hmm.
So
he
heard his sister moving around, but he at least was aware of it. But, you know, Harold says the kids were at least in bed and seemed asleep. He took a couple hours to himself. He went out to a late night store and bought some candy for Valentine's Day the next day, came home, and then finally decided to go to bed at about 2:30. At which time he checked on the kids again.
And by the way, I've seen little bits here and there about people talking about, well, it's so weird that he was up till 2:30, and it's like he worked
like
a swing shift.
Yeah.
And you don't come home after work and immediately go to bed. You wind down for a couple of hours.
Yeah. The other thing I'll add is, you know, he's got two kids who are younger. It's likely these were some of the only moments he had to himself.
Quiet time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was kind of dad's quiet time.
Watch TV.
Yeah, do what he wanted to do, hang out, go do some errands for the family, get candy and stuff, but kind of have a couple hours of alone time.
Yeah.
And then he went to bed. So at 2:30, about 2:30, he went to bed. He checked on the kids. They were both there sleeping ish. And then, so he went to bed.
And then as Joe said, O'Brien had heard Aisha kind of rolling around in bed. He said,
I've heard it two different ways. One is that he woke up when his dad checked on him and got up to go to the bathroom and mm-hmm. came back to bed, and she was asleep but had been adjusting. The other way that I heard it is that he heard her moving around, and actually, I guess there's three ways I've heard it. He heard her moving around and thought she was just readjusting, so he went back to sleep. Or he heard her get up to go to the bathroom and then come back to bed. Either, all three ways, he accounts for her in bed around that time as well, but moving.
Right.
Okay. Awake. Okay?
I don't know.
At 5:45 a.m., Aquila wakes up to get the kids ready for Valentine's Day. By the way, I don't think I mentioned this, but Harold and Aquila got married on Valentine's Day, so it was also their anniversary. So it was going to be kind of a big day. I mean, you know, Valentine's Day, anniversary,
yeah,
celebration, family. And you will remember the kids hadn't had a bath the night before, so she drew a bath for them so they could have a bath before they went to school, because keeping kids clean is actually really important, it turns out.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Their alarm was set to go off at 6:30, but she says that she went in a couple minutes before to wake them up because they needed a little extra time for the bath. And when she came in, O'Brien was in bed, but Aisha was not. Initially, she kind of, you know, did a search of the house, checked the cars, and then thought, well, maybe she went over to Harold's mom's house. It's just across the street. And apparently that was something that she did every once in a while. So she called over to her mother-in-law's house, and her sister-in-law picked up the phone and said, nope, she's not here. At which point Aquila starts to get a little nervous.
Yeah, you bet.
That's a bit of an understatement.
Mm-hmm. She frantically searches the house again. She wakes up Harold. Harold says, well, she was there a couple hours ago. But okay. So he gets up, and O'Brien, you know, gets up too. And either Harold or Aquila, I'm not totally sure, calls Aquila's mom just to make sure that somehow...
Yeah, I was going to say, I heard that Aquila went outside and told Harold to call across the street. But I've also heard that the call was made before she went looking outside.
I think the person who ended up calling 911 was Aquila's mom, not Harold's mom.
Okay.
So I think she was also local. And she said, Harold, call my mom. And, you know, is she there? No. Okay, then call 911 because Aisha's missing. Mm. And then she, of course, understandably, goes outside and starts yelling for her daughter.
She ran around the neighborhood and basically woke everybody up.
Which, again, is fine.
Yeah, it's understandable.
I'd be a little annoyed, but as soon as I understood what was going on, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I should be awake.
Yeah,
I will help
you with this. My understanding is that the whole neighborhood actually turned out and started
looking
too.
They did. Yeah, that's actually just what I was going to say, is that everybody in the neighborhood just like woke up and started looking. The cops, unlike a lot of stories that we cover, responded promptly and perfectly, as far as I can tell.
And they were 10 minutes after they got called, I think.
They were at the house by 6:40 a.m. By 7 a.m., the entire neighborhood was awake and searching for Aisha. Many of the neighbors, many of the friends, many of the family members called out of work that day to help with the searches all day.
They called in missing kid instead of sick?
I think, yeah, they probably were like, hey, this kid we know is missing. She's 9. I'm going to help look for her.
And the conditions were miserable to be doing that.
It was, at least the previous night it had been stormy. I'm not sure if it still was day of the 14th or not. But
I don't think it was.
Actually, it was, because it was like 30 or 40 degrees on the 13th when the storm rolled in. It had gotten 10 or 15 degrees or warmer, but it was still raining. The winds were a little less, but it was still windy. Mm. So it was still crappy, rainy, cold weather.
Yeah, and that's something that's kind of puzzled me a little bit about this, but I'll mention it more later.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the conditions in a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was miserable going. They did bring search dogs in. They were unable to get a scent of any kind, which I guess is pretty understandable in those conditions. Yeah. By the end of the day on Valentine's Day, the 14th, all they found was a mitten. Aquila said it wasn't Aisha's, so that there was no lead there. But a local news station was called and did cover this whole story on the 14th, the search. And three drivers called in response to this news segment and said that they were driving on a stretch of Highway 18 and saw a young girl walking along it sometime between 3:45 and 4:15 a.m.
Just a quick description if you're not on Google. Highway 18 runs kind of north-south, heads down into the actual town of, is it Shelby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Into the actual town of Shelby. Which is about, a mile or two south of their home?
About two.
About two, yeah. And they live on Oak Crest Drive, which is a block off and parallel
right
to Highway 18. In that little subdivision. Just so you get an idea. Okay.
Okay.
And then she was seen in the vicinity of Highway 180, which is like about halfway maybe between their home and Shelby on the east side.
About three quarters of a mile south of her home.
Yeah, it branches off to the east and kind of goes southeast, just as a visual description. Okay, so she was seen in that vicinity.
She was seen about a mile south of her house.
Yeah, that was the last sighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two witnesses, I think, were truck drivers. Maybe not, but I think they were truck drivers. And then one of the witnesses said that they had been kind of surprised that there was a young child at that time in that weather walking. So they circled a couple times, actually three times to be exact, circled three times to kind of see if they could figure out what was going on and witnessed Aisha like jetted off into, there's like little forested pockets
around.
So she just took off into one of those forested areas.
Yeah, it's kind of, again, sadly ironic that somebody actually wanted to help. Aisha probably thought they were pervs and ran away.
In the stands of trees that she could have run into, because I spent a lot of time looking at the aerials, and some of them are very small, so it's when they say she ran off into the woods, I'm like, either she crossed the road and went east into big stands of trees, or she was running into small clumps of trees.
It was a small clump. There's a newscast. There's actually on ABC, they did a Vanished episode on her.
Yeah, so
it was like 5 minutes.
Is this the one where they were highlighting the trees in like a green glow to indicate where she had been seen or something?
Maybe.
Okay.
But you can see she would have been walking down, and then there's a small strand of trees she would have just passed. Either way, the motorist decided, you know what?
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Fine.
Well, yeah, I think he probably thought. And back in the year 2000, not probably quite everybody had a cell phone. I mean, they were pretty ubiquitous by that time. But it's not like today where everybody has one.
Definitely not. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have one.
Yeah. And so, you know, and
I was in like seventh grade, but I didn't have one.
Yeah. And so these people maybe didn't have a means to call the cops. They maybe, you know, especially if you're a guy, you don't want to go grab a little girl and drag her into your car, even if you mean well,
are we going to talk about the bystanders at all in this, or these folks anymore later on, or is this the only time they
come
up?
You mean the witnesses?
The witnesses, sorry, not the bystanders. Wrong word.
Because
I don't understand why the guy circled three times before stopping. You know what I mean? Like, if you're that concerned or that, like, something smells off here. Why did he wait three times before pulling over? It's just weird to me.
Yeah, well, you know, although circling might have made a U-turn three times, so it wasn't three 360s, it was maybe three 180s.
But it's still, to me, it's just weird.
I mean, you think he would have just gone back, turned around once and gone back and rolled down his window and says, hey, what's going on? Why are you here?
Yeah, it's 5 a.m, what are you doing in a rainstorm, kid?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some room for if it was a U-turn and then going back the other way and then a U-turn and then passing her a second time and then doing a U-turn. Because the first time you're blasting down a highway, it's bad weather.
That's true.
You think, did I really just see that? You flip a U-turn.
That was not the word you were going to use. But
You turn around and then turn around again and, you know, pass her again and say, that is exactly what I thought.
And then you do a turn one more time to head in the original direction.
Uh-huh. Then,
if that's the way it was, it's not so weird to me. When I read it in the descriptions, it made me think that this person had made three full loops.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was some imprecise language there.
All right.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But yeah, that would be a little weird. If I had been Aisha, I would have run away too.
Yeah, I would have too. Yeah. Now, it does seem that Aisha packed her backpack her backpack of things probably before the night that she left. that's up to some speculation, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a couple minutes.
It's
but
it's a little easier to pack in a lighted room rather than a dark room where you're trying to like not wake up your brother next to you in the bed.
Yeah. So reportedly, and we're going to say reportedly here because most of this is not actually confirmed, she packed a few changes of clothes, her basketball uniform, a purse with Tweety Bird on it, and
good old Tweety Bird,
a pencil case, and just some other kind of random stuff.
Probably things that were in her school bag to begin with, because it was her school bag.
Yeah, and it sounds like she took more than one of her pairs of shoes were missing, so she would have packed a pair and worn a pair at least. So it sounds like she packed.
She was out
for
there for a long trip. Yeah.
Since the witnesses were able to kind of place a better last sighting of Aisha on Highway 18 instead of near her house, a mile away from her house, basically, the search kind of centered around that area. Mm. And on February 17th, so three days later, some candy wrappers, a pencil, a marker, and a Mickey Mouse hair bow were found in a tool shed at Turner's Upholstery. This company that, according to their website, is still in business.
There's still a sign up if you drive by in Street View.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even when you Google it, their Google business profile pops up and tells you the hours
Debbie
of operation
Turner's.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although they don't answer their phone. I called them twice. They didn't answer.
That's okay. I won't blame them too much.
They probably got caller ID. It's an out-of-state call.
Yeah.
Some stupid podcast.
Another freaking podcaster, I know.
They want me to fix their chair.
I don't think that they have any connection to the case
at all.
But their tool shed did have some stuff in it.
And the tool shed is a bit of a jaunt off of the road.
It is.
It's about 200 feet off of the road.
She had to
take a hoof to get to that place. I'm assuming she was seeking shelter from the weather.
That's my assumption as well.
That's the thing that is still a big head scratcher for me because, you know, like you said, it's a long ways off the road, at least a couple hundred feet. And it's an old building that's, you know, looks a little creepy, frankly, even in daylight. To a 9-year-old kid on a dark and stormy night going into a building like that sounds a little bit much.
Yeah, so we'll talk about...
I'd be a little leery about going into a place like that as an adult, frankly.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little more about why, maybe, in theories.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep going with this timeline, which is that was all they found for like 18 months.
So they had an idea of where she was last sighted, some stuff was found there, and then everything just went cold.
Yeah, it just went really cold until 18 months later, a contractor was doing some digging 26 miles north of Aisha's house, of the DeGree's house, on Highway 18, and found Aisha's backpack that had her stuff in it, reportedly. Uh-huh. Probably had her stuff in it. Again, I'll reinforce the fact that Aisha was last seen a mile south of her house.
She was walking south.
Walking south.
Shelby.
Walking south of her house. Mm-hmm. And then her stuff was found 18 months later, 26 miles north of her house.
I don't see what the problem is. She obviously walked 26 miles north, buried it, walked back. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe not.
Within an hour?
Yeah, I know.
A maximum of an hour.
It does sort of point in one direction, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of does.
And we know the bag was hers, though, because it had her name was written on stuff, right?
Well, I'll just say that the FBI is in charge of this case, as this should be. And it is an ongoing investigation that they are actively pursuing leads in. So they have confirmed that the bag was hers. They have not confirmed any of the contents. That's one of the places that we hear a lot about the basketball uniform was in that bag. But realistically, we're pretty sure due to some like calls that one of us placed, I bet you can guess who, that the basketball uniform is just an internet add-on.
Appears to be, yeah.
But
that same reporter that I talked to with the Shelby Star said, yeah, there's no evidence whatsoever. There might be a basketball uniform, but...
But there might not be.
Yeah.
And since it is an active investigation, the only thing that authorities have said is, yes, this bag did belong to Aisha. They haven't confirmed anything surrounding it, what was in it, what wasn't in it, if there was any forensic evidence on it, etc.
Oh, anyway, by the way, I wanted to give a shout out to Joyce Orlando with the Shelby Star. If you're listening, because I gave Joyce the name of our podcast, and so maybe she is listening.
And she helped us clear some things up.
Yeah,
she did. She was very generous with her time. So thanks again, and I hope you're enjoying the podcast, Joyce.
back to not plugging other people.
Yeah. Let's talk about the mystery again.
Reportedly, Aisha's bag had her name and phone number on a piece of paper written on it. Again, the internet will say scrawled in childlike handwriting in pencil, but like how would you know that? Literally how?
It's like, and then on the internet will say like scrawled, you know, like help me, scrawled.
They would,
know,
I'm sure the internet would add that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Also in her backpack were several sets of clothes, the basketball uniform that we mentioned before, her pencil case, and photos of her family. Again, literally there is no way to confirm any of that stuff. The FBI has never released that. And I've seen interviews with Aquila where she says, this is what was missing from our house. There was no mention of family pictures missing, and there was no mention of her basketball uniform missing. So who knows?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. If you took a bunch of stuff out of my house and just said, Joe, is there anything missing? I would look around and probably say, I don't know. I mean,
right.
You'd know a few things, but you probably wouldn't notice all of it right away.
You would probably notice if family pictures were missing, though.
Yeah. I mean,
and one single basketball uniform.
You might notice that. I don't know. But this is where it helps to be poor. You're going to have less stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps.
Yeah. Or being a parent. Because you know what your kid has, usually.
Yeah.
It's not like they've acquired
them.
Things on their own, usually.
At that age, no.
Yeah.
And the bags...
So the bag, her backpack was actually found double bagged in trash bags.
Yeah, that's
black
the part
trash
that,
bags.
That is just kind of spine-tingling on this.
Yeah.
Well, this is a little strange, because obviously you buried it because you wanted to get rid of it. So why do you try to preserve it by double wrapping it in trash bags is what I don't get. Or why
circular
for that matter,
logic, yes.
Why for that matter, by the way, do you keep it all together rather than just, you know, taking the contents out and throwing them in random trash cans?
Yeah, or why don't you like put a brick in that bag and throw it in the river?
There's that too. I mean,
that'll destroy things real quick.
Yeah, when you think about the highest profile way to get rid of this stuff.
I mean,
to me, chucking it all in a trash can is a lot lower profile than going out in a field and digging a hole and burying it.
Yeah, and trash cans, that's going to go to the dump. It's probably never going to get found.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Reportedly nearby where they found the bags.
The double bag bag.
The double bag bag, yeah. There were a pair of men's khaki pants and some animal bones. It was initially reported bones, and then they since have said, no, they were animal bones. Calm down.
It is the side of the highway, though.
It is.
And people throw things out of their cars.
Well,
I
mean, it's like a couple hundred feet off the highway. It's not just like the shoulder of the highway. It's a little far. They were developing it for stuff, which
that's
all
true.
The development is
kind of
far.
So it wouldn't have been right
far.
On the shoulder. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I mean, it's just barren land. Animals die. No big deal. The khaki pants, I don't know.
Even that's not that unusual.
It's not that unusual.
I've stumbled across items of clothing, outdoors and all kinds of different places.
In the woods and stuff.
Yeah. In the woods and various other places.
Why is there one sock?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, that's not at all unusual.
Yeah. Again, the FBI did take custody of all of this stuff and have apparently done forensic testing. But again, since it's an ongoing investigation, they haven't released any of the results. And you'll also see it said that later that year in October, so in October of 2001, the same
year after she disappeared,
that a bag similar to the bag that Aisha's bag was found in.
You mean a garbage bag?
A black garbage bag was found near the site where her bag was found.
Well, those things aren't common at all.
I know. Yeah. And they said it was the same. And they found it.
It was a hefty garbage bag. And those are a rare breed.
Yeah. Anyway, they apparently sent it to the FBI and they've done some testing on that as well. Again, it's weird. It's reaching, but okay.
Yeah, they're desperate.
Yeah. In 2015, the FBI decided to reexamine the case in earnest, which included re-interviewing all of the witnesses. They put forth a $25,000 reward, and then the community has added an additional $20,000 reward. So the total reward for information leading to the discovery of what happened to Aisha is $45,000, which is not nothing.
Nope.
However, out of the re-interviewing process, it does seem that somebody thought they remembered seeing Aisha get into a car that was a dark green, either Lincoln Continental or Ford Thunderbird from the early 1970s.
And that's a distinctive car because they're big old boats.
Pretty, yeah.
Huge, long, two-door boats.
Yeah. The FBI released this information in May of this year, so 2016, for those of you who are not listening.
2017 is this year when this will come out.
Dang. Okay. See, that's hard. May of 2016 is when they released this information. And they said they were planning, the FBI said they were planning to run registrations on cars of similar make, model, and color. But they weren't super optimistic because it's unlikely that that car is still registered. And it sounded like they could only run registrations within a certain
frankly, in the early 70s, frame. A lot of cars that were not dissimilar to those were out there. So they got to run a lot of cars.
But they have to know, they need to run registration from 2000 when she disappeared, not the 70s.
Yeah. Right. So, but and then cars change hands, and cars move to different states all the time.
Not have been from North Carolina to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, so that's a needle in a haystack.
It is.
There.
It really is.
That's the kind of thing where you got to you got to put it out there with photographs and hope somebody out there sees a story and recognizes a car.
Well, but there's no photograph of the car.
Actually, no, but they have put photographs of the car.
Cars of that make that may be similar, but also may not be the car at all. The other thing people, you'll see this on the internet, is that apparently there was some rust in the wheel wells of this car, which I have a huge problem with.
I heard it also said that there was rust around the wheel wells, which would be like on the outside.
Either way.
You know, inside the wheel well, it's kind of hard to see.
I doubt that it's describing the interior of the wheel well.
That's not what they're describing. That's not what I'm trying to say they're describing, but that's not why I have a problem with it. I have a problem with it because it's a dark and stormy, horrible night. How are you seeing this?
Mm-hmm.
And how did this... So here's my problem with the whole she got into this green giant car thing is how the hell did that suddenly get remembered 15 years later?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't want to say anything negative about any of the people who were re-interviewed, but I feel like maybe somebody invented a detail unintentionally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, memory is a funny thing. I wouldn't take it too terribly seriously. But at the same time, they're grasping at straws. I mean, everybody's pretty desperate here.
Yeah.
So we're into theories now.
Oh, okay.
You sound really excited about theory time, Devin.
No, I don't like the theories on this one.
I'm looking at your list, and I don't see aliens anywhere.
Sorry.
Yeah.
There could have been aliens.
Yeah, come on.
It's not the worst. Since there is no sign of forced entry... The external doors on the degree house were all locked.
So presumably she used her key to lock the house after she left.
Yep. They are all deadbolt locked. So she did have a key.
So she locked it from the outside.
So she locked it from the outside. It appears that she also left with a well-packed and planned bag. Pretty much everyone assumes that Aisha walked out of the house of her own volition.
She must have because, I mean, somebody couldn't have broken in and overpowered her without waking up her brother next to her in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her parents. They were only asleep for a couple hours. And, it sounds like it was a pretty small house. And I think overwhelmingly I agree that she did get up and walk out herself.
Which is strange because 3 or so in the morning and it's a really foul night out and it's dark. I mean,
the reasoning doesn't work.
There's no good logic here. Yeah. But again, I mean, we're talking about a 9-year-old girl and sometimes kids do weird things. But one of the issues here is, of course, why would she run away?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that would be the first theory is that she just ran away.
Mm-hmm.
As previously mentioned, her home life was stable. It was safe. She had a really good social network of people. There was no reports of her, having bad academics. She had lost that one game, the one basketball game, but that was the first game of the season they had lost.
Did you find out a lot about Aisha herself? Because one of the things I was wondering about that I was not able to get answered was just how obsessed with basketball was she?
I don't think she was that obsessed.
So. She was an... I remember listening to an interview from her dad, and her dad was all about sports. And so she, because she was an athlete, was all about sports. And so she took sports seriously, but she played several sports, and she was nine. So I don't think that she was, you know, the fanatical diehard for it.
Not thinking she's going to make it to the big leagues or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's a little early for that, other than the typical kid daydream.
Right, but additional to that, if, you know, I see the train of thought here is maybe she was so upset that she decided to leave, but she was not upset. There are no reports of her continuing to be upset the weekend. Mm. Additional to all of that, according to people who research this sort of stuff, and because sometimes you get complaints about this, Ben Ermini, who's the director of the National Center for Missing and Exploiting Children's Missing Children Division, and John Goad, who is the director of the North Carolina Center for Missing Persons. Those are two of the people that I read their research on, citing my sources.
I appreciate that.
Kids don't really run away, like seriously run away, until about 12. And state officials almost never, like less than 1% of the time, will a state official classify children under 10 as runaways. They're always missing persons or abducted children.
Because at that age, if there is a quote-unquote runaway situation, it's a ran and hid under the stairs all day situation, not a I'm out of here and I'm
for good.
For good.
I mean, definitely there are kids who younger than 12 who do that thing where, you know, they run until they get to the end of the block and then suddenly they realize
that, yeah, this sucks.
And they come home.
Yeah.
Or even run away for a couple hours, but they come home.
But I got to tell you the other thing that too, that strictly being a runaway is that I don't remember what I was doing at age 9 or what I was thinking. I really don't remember at all. I didn't run away that I can recall. But if I were going to run away at that age or any other age, I would do it on a nice sunny afternoon, or at least I would do it during the daylight. I wouldn't leave at 3 in the morning.
I do remember some of the things that I did and thought at that age. And honestly, you live in a fantasy land.
Mm-hmm.
You really think that everything is sunshine and roses. And just like that The Whipping Boy, the book, you're going to go on these things and it's going to be great and it's going to be fine. It's just that, you know, most kids get out and they go, oh, crap, I don't know what I'm doing.
And
they go home. Yeah.
Well, and the other reason I don't think it was strictly a runaway situation is she didn't really dress for the weather. From what I've seen, the descriptions of people that saw her out on Highway 18, it didn't appear that she was wearing a coat.
Yeah, that's true. But just today, I was getting gas. It's cold here, we should mention.
It's a little chilly. It's in the 40s.
It was in the 30s today.
And raining.
Yeah.
At times.
And I was sitting getting gas, freezing in my car with my mittens on, and past me walks a kid who's probably 11, boy, wearing athletic shorts and a t-shirt and a Santa hat.
I watch the kids in my neighborhood do that all the time, and I forget that at that age,
you're
invincible. Little heaters, and they are immune to the cold for longer than us adults.
Right.
Well, it helps.
Us old people.
That's just something about Portland, too. You see tons of people wearing shorts in the wintertime here and stuff like that.
Oh, it's not just Portland.
Yeah.
But it's usually shorts and, like, a parka.
Yeah.
But all of that aside, you know, she did had recently read The Whipping Boy, so people will cite that as, oh, she thought she was going on an adventure. But again, I've read The Whipping Boy, and it's not glorified. Yeah, everything works out in the end, that's fine, but some really bad stuff happens to them while they're traveling. And I mean, I don't know, as a 9-year-old, if you read that and think, oh, running away sounds like fun, getting kidnapped and beat up, that sounds like fun. I don't think so.
I think just running away randomly, I don't think so. I'm not buying that at all.
No, I agree with that. But there's a sub theory to this, and that is that somebody could have influenced her to run away.
Yeah.
Coached her.
And that's why,
if you will.
And that's why I was wondering about how into basketball she was. And that's why I tried to find out if her basketball uniform was packed in her bag.
Yeah.
Because supposing she was feeling frustrated on Saturday after, like, fouling out and everything like that, supposing she had fallen under the influence of some adult who said something like, you know, hey, I know about this special camp for prepubescent girls, and if you go attend this school for a week or two, you'll be a freaking star. But the important thing is you can't tell your parents. It's got to be a surprise. Just meet me, you know, at the intersection of Highway 18 and Highway 180 at 3:30 in the morning on Valentine's Day and bring a bag and, you know, we'll make you a star.
That's how LeBron James got started.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Pretty sure so that's true, actually.
Kinda, and that's why I was wondering about the basketball angle.
Yeah, with that, no,
because
I agree
she
with
had
that.
To be, to do what she did, it wasn't some random thing. She had to be highly motivated to go out in the dark of a stormy night, a nine-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm. And who's travel. Scared of the dark?
Yeah, who was scared of the dark. And she, something really motivated that girl. And God knows what it was.
Yeah.
She wanted something really
that.
Bad.
She did.
Or she wanted to get away from something really bad.
In her family?
I'm not saying there's anything going on at her home because her parents, from everything I can tell, were loving and doing everything right. But that doesn't mean something around her, in her neighborhood,
some
a relative, a neighbor, something put the fear of God into her and she decided she had to go.
Maybe.
I mean,
I don't know.
Things happen to kids and kids don't tell right away.
Yeah, true.
I'm not saying that's what happened, but you can't rule it out because it's so inexplicable that she did what she did.
You're right. You can't rule it out. One of the big question marks for me on that idea is that she and O'Brien were of similar age and it sounds like did most everything together. And I think that he would have, if something had happened, he might not have mentioned to his parents right away. But once she went missing, I trust that he would have said, oh, yeah, this kid was being mean to her.
He probably would have known, yeah.
That's my...
I don't know. We're all making presumptions here. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, it really is. It's unlikely to me, at least, that she met a predator online. I think it would have been in person.
It would have been somebody at her school, like a coach, or maybe somebody at church, possibly.
Yeah. And I also think that if she was influenced to leave, they instructed her to go to the tool shed at the upholstery place.
Could be.
Because I agree with you that it's creepy. And it seems like she was kind of hanging out there for a little while. And she had to have passed a lot of shelters.
Yeah, potentially.
There were things closer to the road that she could have ducked into to take shelter from the weather.
Right.
And there were houses that she could have gone to and knocked on the door.
Right. So I think she was instructed to go there. It seems like she was hanging out there for a little while. And then also, you know, it's kind of... The fact that her hair bow was found there makes me think that something happened there.
In some kind of struggle?
Just even a little bit of something. I don't think there was any sign of a struggle. But, you know, her pencil and her marker were there. So I think she was probably bored there for a while. That's
doing
to me at least. They were like
something.
Out,
yeah.
You know, and she was just kind of hanging out, doodling and stuff like that. And then whoever was supposed to picked her up. I don't know. That's my theory. There's one internet suspect that I'm not ready to 100% rule out, but I'm not ready to 100% say it was him. Mostly because I think the police are pretty sure that it's not him, but that's okay. We're going to talk about him anyway. He is currently serving 2 consecutive life sentences for the murder of 7-year-old Shalonda Poole.
Mm-hmm. He didn't just murder her. It was a little worse than that.
That's true, but we're not going to talk
about
it.
I know.
He did very, very bad things.
Yeah.
He apparently was actually a family friend of the Pooles for a few months prior, but now, initially...
And did he know the degrees, Aisha's family?
I don't think so. I haven't been able to see...
Somehow the internet has linked this guy to the case, but... That seems the internet is the only one who has made that link.
Yeah, I think the police, when the internet linked it, the police thought, okay, fine, we'll like check it out. And there's no connection really. But somebody else was arrested for Shalonda's murder initially. But it turns out that person didn't do it. It was this guy. His name is Donald Ferguson.
And he participated in the search. It's a creepy thing when you hear these kind of stories and you find out, oh, God, he was actually taking part, because that's a weird game there.
That's not at all unheard of.
I know that. That's why they look at the people who volunteer.
Yeah. They do. And they look for you to, like, lead them to the body, because often that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We talked about that in
several.
The Moxley
murder.
Well,
I don't think that there's actually a connection to the Degree family, but Aisha and Shalonda were both young Black girls, and they do kind of look alike from all the pictures I can see.
But it's got to be more than that. I mean, maybe he stumbled upon her on Highway 18. Sheer luck.
That's possible.
That's counter to what Devin's theory is here, that she was lured away, though, if he just stumbled upon her.
Right. But the reason that people have made this connection is that Ferguson and Sholanda Poole, before she was murdered, the Pooles lived in South Carolina, and the DeGrees lived in North Carolina. So people are, you know, they're close, kind of. So, yeah.
So we're
maybe he was just kind of traveling around. And I don't know. It sounds like he was kind of an odd job handyman kind of guy, which is a great cover if you're a horrible human being.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying that all handyman people are horrible human beings.
No, this is much like the guy that we talked about in the Beaumont Children episode, the spider who was traveling around. Same scenario.
Yeah. And it is close, and it's kind of, I mean, Sholanda was murdered in 1990, and then 10 years later, Aisha went missing from a similar area. So people are thinking maybe there's a connection, but again, the police seem to have ruled that out.
Yeah, I'm kind of guessing.
Kind of circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Ferguson pleaded guilty to the charges in return for not getting the death penalty.
Yeah, so he's serving two consecutive life sentences.
And so I got to presume right now the police are fairly secure in the knowledge that he's not ever going to get out of prison. So I'm assuming they went to him and said, dude, we'll give you immunity. Just tell us what happened. You know?
They do that a lot to solve crimes.
They do that a lot. In this case, you're not losing out because the guy's already locked up for good.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
why not?
You're not
going to get anything out of charging him and giving him five more sentences.
Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly.
And they've gotten nothing out of him. Doesn't mean he's not the killer, but, well.
Yeah. But even if it wasn't Ferguson, I think it's more than likely that somebody got to Aisha and really just convinced her that she should leave her life for a better life.
It's not even necessarily that. It could have been like what I'm saying. Leave for a week. Go to my special basketball camp and we'll make you a star. It could have been something like that, too.
Or, hey, we got this princess that looks just like you.
Or Tweety Bird wants you to come visit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's 100 ways that could go.
Yeah. There's one other theory here.
Oh, there's more than this theory, but
it's hard to...
I know.
One theory you will see out there, this is from Web Sleuths, is that Aisha was sleepwalking.
Mm.
It's a bad theory for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I think so.
On Web Sleuths, they say, well, you know, Aisha's mom says that she had a history of sleepwalking, which is just 100% bunk. I've never seen Aquila quoted as saying that. When people say, oh yeah, can you link me to that? There's obviously like radio silence. Nobody can ever link to that. It's totally unfounded. As far as I can tell, Aisha had no history of sleepwalking.
Well, even if she did, she gets up, she either packs her bag or she picks up the bag she had packed previously because she somehow knew she was going to go sleepwalking later.
Right.
She exits the house, sleepwalking, deadbolts the door from the outside while still sleepwalking and heads on down like...
So I've heard of people who are taking Ambien do that kind of behavior, but not 9-year-old kids.
Okay, in fairness, we had a childhood friend that sleepwalked, and his family said, oh, okay, you know what'll keep you from sleepwalking is if we put you on the top bunk. But he managed to, I think he was like 12 when he did this, so a little older, but he managed to climb out of the top bunk. And this was, his sister was sleeping on the bunk below. She didn't wake up, and she was my friend. She was not a particularly heavy sleeper, but he climbed out of that, walked down 2 flights of stairs, unlocked the door, walked out. It was a knob handle lock, but he unlocked the deadbolt, walked out, closed the door, didn't slam it because his parents would have heard if he'd slammed the door, closed it quietly behind him, walked out, and woke up in the middle of the street when someone was honking at him at 12. So, I mean, it's possible, but there are a lot of other steps here, right? Again, packed a bag that...
That's not sleepwalking
behavior.
That's
premeditated there, yeah.
Or packed the bag that night. I think it's possible. I think I said earlier that I thought she pre-packed it, but now I think she didn't pre-pack it. I don't know. I don't know what packing situation. Either way, that's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And if O'Brien was sensitive enough to hear her get up and go back to bed, he would have heard her leave again and not come back. That's just my 2 cents.
You'd think.
You would think. Also, it was a super crappy night out. Like 34 degrees, freezing cold,
that
pouring rain.
Up.
That would wake you up. There's no way that you're going to sleepwalk for a mile. That's a good hour, probably, for a 9-year-old.
In 34 degree weather, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
It is possible that she, you know, got a little bit and then woke up and was turned around, but I think she would have had to been out of her little subdivision whatever area that we're calling their neighborhood, mm-hmm. for her to have gotten that turned around.
Yeah.
So she would have had to made it all the way out to Highway 18 in really crappy weather. I don't think that's possible. I just don't think it's possible.
No.
There's one component of this theory that says, okay, so she was sleepwalking, but like what happened? How did blah, blah, blah. She was sleepwalking and then somebody hit her with the car and freaked out and tried to cover it up. First of all, I will grant you that on a night like that, when it's raining that much and stuff like that, it's possible that any
totally
evidence could
do.
Have washed away. But that ignores the fact that they found some of her stuff in the tool shed.
So take sleepwalking out of this equation, because sleepwalking is silliness.
Yeah.
And I think we can stop beating on it.
Okay.
So, okay.
Agreed.
But there are ways that that what you're talking about could have gone down, which is she did decide to leave. She walked, she took shelter. She was dinking around playing with stuff in her bag and then went back out on the road to continue her hike, at which point she gets hit by a car. I mean, that's completely possible. I mean, when I read this, I initially thought I had to go looking on the map to find where her school was, because I thought, I wonder if she's got some screwball idea that she's got to go to school early to do something, except the school is like 5 miles north of where she lives in Falston rather than several miles south in Shelby. So that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Also, why pack like 12 pairs of clothes? But okay.
Well, a change or two of clothes. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. But you know what does? I did notice and I did think about that falls in line with the it's an accident and somebody decides to hide it. Weirdly, you know what I found several of in the area that she disappeared?
What?
Ground level pools.
You mean ground level? You mean like
swimming pools?
You mean swimming pools that are in the ground, or
yes.
swimming pools that are sitting on top of the ground?
In the ground.
Yeah.
In ground swimming pools.
Yeah.
And I was looking through the satellite footage, and one of them eventually, in the wintertime images, had a cover, but they were uncovered. So she would have had to go trekking to get to one of them if she were to do a... What's the kid who disappeared on the phone? Brandon
Swanson.
Yeah, she could have pulled a Swanson and decided to take a shortcut from the shed to the road, and that would have run her through if she took the right vector through a yard that had a pool in it.
Did it not have a fence around it?
No, not that I could tell. I didn't see hardly any fences when you looked at it. You know how you get the right daylight and you can see the shadows?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see hardly any fences. So
I could totally see that. You know, you wake up and you find a kid floating in your pool and you think, lawsuit, unless I get rid of the body.
Yeah.
Yeah, which could be.
I mean, scandalous, but people do it. This is a total outlier and I totally get it. But it's things I started deciding, okay, what has not been talked about? And these were things I started looking at when I looked at her environment.
I guess, and again, I have no way of knowing this, but it seems like there would have been significant water damage to her backpack and the contents of it if she had drowned in a pool. But maybe, we don't know if that
It was a rainy
not.
Night.
That's true.
Everything may have been soaked. The other thing is, she was at an upholstery shop, and, you know, if they had answered their phone, we could find out if they tanned any of their own leather. Because if they tan leather, that's caustic material, and that means you can chuck a body into it and it disappears pretty easily.
Uh-huh.
I mean, again,
and,
completely
you know,
outlier things, and I don't think they're right, but...
Yeah,
this,
I don't think anybody suspects the upholstery guys.
Oh, no, know? I don't think that they did anything, but I'm just saying...
You want to take a good look at that leather thing you had recovered by them, probably.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to suspect the leather people. I don't see...
I
don't mean leather, I mean the upholstery people.
Right. I'm just saying that, if there's so few things here, I'm just looking for other things that have been it.
Another one. As far as getting run over by a car, though, I want to say that I really, really, really doubt that. Because even though it totally could easily have happened... If it were me, I'd just look around, see if there was no witnesses, and I would just drive away. I wouldn't, like, load the body into the trunk of my car and go dispose of it. I'd just get out of there.
Yeah, it's hit and run.
Exactly. Just take off, you know, and so the whole, it just makes no sense.
I really hope that's not the case.
Oh, yeah.
I Do you have any other
things you
want to
talk about? No, that's all I have.
Do you have any things you want to talk about?
No, I mean, all I could say is that Aisha, whatever her motivation was, obviously she was highly motivated for some strange reason. And I don't know that we're ever going to know what that reason was.
I agree with that. Yeah. I'll just mention, I've seen on some Reddit threads, people saying, well, obviously the parents had something to do with it. It's super suspicious that the dad said that they really are doubting Harold's story, that he checked on her. And they were, and both the kids were asleep. And then, like,
again,
they
said,
and then an hour later, she was seen, blah, blah, blah. No, stop. Like, just stop. Stop. Like, if there was any suspicion on the family at all, it would have been exposed.
What you're talking about that you read on Reddit is the same inflammatory reaction that we get emails about sometimes when people hear one thing and they block everything else and they react. Yeah. And that's exactly what that is.
Yeah. And I want to just go ahead and go on the record and saying, like, if you think that, you're a horrible human being, so stop. Like, just stop.
Yeah, well, even if the dad, for some reason, even if he forgot to check them at 2:30, whatever, so what? You know, it doesn't make
No. They're saying that he's lying about it and he did something nefarious and, he's the reason that she disappeared.
That seems rather unlikely, you know?
Oh, don't do that. He took her out of he got her out of bed, and then when they went for, quote unquote, to get candy, something else. Okay. Yeah, that's, no, I don't buy it. Okay,
that's bad.
Whatever.
Yeah, now her brother heard her rustling around the bed way later than that.
Yep.
I seen him on the tube, seen interviews with him. He seems like a nice enough guy. He doesn't look like a murderer to me, but maybe.
Both of them are just, I think, really sad, which
they should be.
Yeah, it's expected. So,
and for Christ's sakes, this thing happened on their wedding anniversary, too. And, you know, and so that kind of, like, sullies the whole thing for them.
Yeah.
So that's all we have on this. Frustratingly. Yeah.
If you out there have something more for us, we'd like to hear from you.
This episode and some of the links that we used for research will be on our website. The website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You are probably listening to us on iTunes. If you are and you haven't already subscribed and left a comment and, I'm sorry, a review and a rating, please do that. That's how other people find us.
Mm-hmm.
If you're streaming it, we do stream on like literally everything. So if you're streaming us and you can subscribe or leave a comment, oh my God, a review or
a good
rating. please do that. Again, that's how people find us. We are on the social media. We have a Facebook group and page. We are on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We're Thinking Sideways there. And then we have our very own subreddit, which is just Thinking Sideways. It's not Thinking Sideways Pod. If you post there, I won't see it. Some of you are still doing that. Stop it. You can email us if you have any kind of suggestions, general accolades, or any kind of meaningful constructive criticism, because we like to be able to have a discussion with people about that.
Absolutely. And if we left something out, overlooked some vital detail, we'd like to know about it.
Making fun of us.
Not that we've ever done that.
Nope, never.
It could happen, maybe.
Yep. So you can email us at thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. You can buy our merch. We've got shirts, mugs, stickers, nightlights, whatever you could possibly think of. Those are going to be on Zazzle and Redbubble. Those are linked on our website. You can do a PayPal one-time donation, or you can do a recurring donation on PayPal, but I feel like it's more trouble than it's worth. Or you can do a recurring donation on Patreon. Ooh. That's patreon.com/thinkingsideways, and that's just charges you per episode. It's like a marathon thing.
Yeah, a lot of people pledge like, you know, $100 an episode. Well, I'm kidding. That's fantasy land, like $1 an episode maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But all voluntary. It's Patreon.
.com/thinkingsideways.
Mm-hmm.
All of that having been said, I don't want to make fun of anything, so I'm just going to say I'll see you guys next week.
I think we're done with this one. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, ta-ta,
Happy
everybody.
New Year.
Yeah, bye.